Well, good evening. It's 7:01. Pardon me, in 34 seconds. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio, and we stream on the World Wide Web at kzyx.org. It's a beautiful, warm evening here in Philo, California, and I welcome you. My name is Athena Melville, and we're getting ready for Education Now. But before, I would like to tell you about a few things. A free workshop discussing nutrients for strong bones, a healing heart, and a quiet wit with Ann Rathburn, a certified nutrition consultant. We'll discuss the role of calcium, vitamin C, and other nutrients in this workshop. She will answer questions about food and whether or not to take nutritional supplements. For more information, contact Waldy Helma at 961-4305. It's going to be located at the Redwood Coast Senior Center in Fort Bragg. And also, Jam Dance All Ages. Take off your shoes and dance to DJ Pete. For more information, contact Bruce Herring at 895-3589. Once again, that's 895-3589 or online at Bruce Herring at PacificNet. This is taking place at the Philo Grange on August 21st. And at the Eagles Hall Theater, 210 North Corey at Alder in Fort Bragg on August 22nd at 7:30. Are you game? Brassy, sassy, Tony Award winning, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 7:30, Sunday, 3 p.m. Sounds, feels like good old days. Hey there. Steam Heat, Hernando's Hideaway, Sleeping, Pajama Factory workers want a pay increase of 7.5 cents, a big raise in the 1950s, August 20th through September 27th. Show of the Pajama Game at the Gloriana Musical Theater. Don't miss it. I know my old friend Ann Woodhead and mentor to my students has done the choreography for that show. Well, we're getting ready for Education Now, and Education Now support for it comes from our members and the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation offering educational consulting and in-person or online tutoring. Information at pacificsites.com/Tilda Hermes. And support for Education Now also comes from our members and from the California Association of Professional Scientists, 3,000 state scientists protecting public health and California's natural resources while promoting efficiencies in state government. Information at calscientists.org. Well, there you have it. So let's get started. I am very excited about our show tonight, and so we'll go to the music.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself. Because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their fathers have.
Well, welcome once again to Education Now. My name is Athena Melville, and I'm so delighted tonight because I have a wonderful show. Discovering and Developing Creative Imagination and the eScript Program is our topic tonight on Education Now with my guest, Kathleen Kirkpatrick. Currently teaching at Mendocino College, Kathleen is a visual arts educator and artist with 27 years experience at the secondary level and 9 years at the college level. Kathleen Kirkpatrick is also the creator and curator of the annual exhibition Art Under 20 for artists under 20 years of age, and of A Hot Winter's Night, the annual collaborative Willits High School Visual and Performing Arts event. In 2000, Kathleen started the Willits High School Safeway eScript art program, earning over $200,000 for the high school visual arts department. She is an advocate for visual arts education for all students as a core academic subject. She believes that a thorough grounding in the arts is a significant component of cultural literacy and of our wholeness as human beings. Kathleen has been teaching visual arts from Mendocino College for 9 years. She teaches Art 60, Discovering and Developing Creative Imagination, Art 210, Drawing, Art 213, Composition and Color, Art 42, Hand Building Ceramics, and Art 246, Advanced Beginning Raku and Ceramics. And of course, she's going to be talking to us tonight about Discovering and Developing Creative Imagination, Art 60. Her courses include arts history, arts criticism, events in the world of visual arts, tools, techniques, and art practices. In 2001, Kathleen was selected to attend the Teachers Institute to Contemporary Art at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. She was also selected to attend the Kennedy Center for the Arts 2-day seminar, Planning Effective Workshops for Teachers, in the spring of 2005. In partnership with Jan Stevens, Kathleen started Art Keys, Opening Minds and Locking in Learning. Art Keys presents workshops and seminars for teachers and artists. The workshops are designed to help educators use the California Standards for Visual Arts as a resource to integrate visual arts into their curriculum and to understand the visual arts elements and principles. Kathleen is a member of the California Alliance for the Arts, the National Art Education Association, the California Art Education Association, Arts Council of Mendocino County, and the Willits Center for the Arts. Kathleen has been the Fine Arts Judge for the Redwood Empire Fair and for the Mendocino County Fair in Boonville for the last 3 years. So here we go. I'm going to go right into the interview with Kathleen. Welcome to the KZYX and Z Airwaves, Kathleen.
Thank you very much, Athena. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Let's just jump right in to the first part of our topic, Discovering and Developing Creative Imagination.
Yeah, it's a great class. It's credit, no credit. It's not letter grade transferable. It's a survey course that's designed to encourage and entice people who may have creative yearnings, but they haven't had found a way to voice those yet, or the confidence to feel secure in being able to put their thoughts or concerns or energy into a two- or three-dimensional artwork. And so it does cover both two- and three-dimensional work. We work in clay, and we've worked on paper, and we've worked with lots of different media, you know, from graphite to acrylic, and the students get a chance to experience a broad range of different art media. And that gives them a chance to think, gee, I really like this, or gosh, that appeals to me. So then they can start making informed personal choices and begin to develop a personal style. So that's what it's all about. And I try to hit the really biggies in terms of art history, you know, like we did people like Paul Klee and Vincent van Gogh and Peter Volkos in ceramics and Rembrandt. People that they may have heard the name, artists that they may have heard the name, but they don't really know that much about them. And so that would be our guest artist for the evening, and there might even be in the making art section of the class an assignment that would relate to one of those guest artists. Like with Paul Klee, you know, he makes these inventive, almost childlike shapes, and that's a good place for a beginning artist to start out. You know, here is a successful, important artist whose work is very accessible, easy to understand. It can appeal to people in their 60s, in their teens, and in their 10s. It's just that accessible because the shapes are so simple. And then with someone like Rembrandt, there might be a making art experience that would ask you to seek out light and shadow, because that's something that he's very well known for, his ability to use chiaroscuro, you know, chiaro, light, oscuro, dark, and put those two next to one another, and you get an enhanced sense of depth, and boom, things pop, and light suddenly appears in your artwork. So the students got a chance to try a lot of different things and to develop confidence and to finally believe that, yes, I can do this too. It comes with the human operating system. You know, if you're not an android, you're a real human being, not in disguise on our planet, then, you know, you're going to be able to do this because it's just part of, it's like learning to walk or drive a car or ride a bike. And it's a pleasure to do.
Yes, and it's so wonderful because you're integrating, there's the hands-on, the actual process, and then there is the history.
Exactly. I mean, art is a very three-dimensional and very complex or complete structure. You know, it includes its own vocabulary, its own science, its own history, its own vocabulary, its own techniques, its own traditions and processes. Different artists work in different ways. They're very curious about how one another works. Artists love to share their processes. And one of the things that I did with, not this class, but my last one, was invite Linda McDonald, a very internationally known and successful visual artist here in Willits, who is a quilter and oil painter very contemporary fashion.
Yes.
And she went through her process, how she's been wandered through Willits taking photographs, ended up over at one of the old trash burners that was just about to be taken down. You know, it was an artifact of the logging days. And, you know, she's very affected by things that impact Mendocino County environmentally and the history of that. You know, the drive-through redwood tree has appeared in her work. We have one of her pieces called Migration of the California Red-Legged Frog. And it's the story of a man in the Bay Area who wrote EIRs, Environmental Impact Reports, and he sneaked onto a construction site to remove some California red-legged frogs that he discovered in a marshy area, and he got caught. And so she's got in her painting, it's a painting on cloth, a hand reaching out to grab this beautiful, sexy red-legged frog that's sort of squirming in the hand. And there's a city in the background, you know, sort of a silhouette. And she's, you know, he is taking away this frog.
Yes.
And, you know, he ended up being fined, and his company was fined, and his reputation was damaged. And, you know, those sort of things impact Linda, and they are important to her. And so she came and talked about her process and how this, what this meant to her and how she developed the idea. First a few sketches, then compressing it, like the marsh was much bigger in the original, and then she compacted, she zoomed in on the hand and made the frog bigger, and she explained why she did that and how it started out, you know, as a little seedling of an idea, and then how it grew to a beautiful finished product that we love so much, we included it in our own personal art collection.
Yes, I know. I've seen it, and it's amazing. And I've seen so much of her work. Her quilts are, they just, I mean, they were in New York and the museum there in Willits. I remember going to an opening. It was just, she's outstanding. There are so many of you there that are so outstanding.
Yeah.
I just admire what you're doing. Some of the other classes that you're teaching at Mendocino College, the drawing class, for instance.
That's coming up in the fall.
Which is why you can't be with me in person.
Yes, I'll be teaching.
Yes.
I'm teaching tonight, you guys, out there in Radio Land. It's my drawing class, and it goes for two semesters. It meets one night a week. You earn 1.5 letter grade transferable credits for taking the class in the first semester and the same in the second. So if you take both parts, then you have your three-unit class. Because we can only do one night a week, so that's how it gets stretched out like that. But it works out fine, and for many people during the busy, busy school year, one night a week is just about what they can spend.
Right.
So we have 3 hours together, and I usually present for about 50 minutes to an hour and a half. Like on the first night when we have to go through the syllabus and do a lot of homework, housekeeping stuff, then it's a little longer, but I try to keep my presentation to about 50 minutes. And I start off with the internet research homework from the week before. So what did you find out about Vincent van Gogh's brother, Theo? What were you able to find out on the internet about him and his relationship with his brother? And then we use the opening thought, and we'll have a quote from an artist or someone who is learning about art or criticizing art and their take on maybe Vincent's work. So I try to connect it. Each class, I try to connect, tie up as many things together as I possibly can.
Yes.
And then the next thing is a technique, and that might be how to do a watercolor wash, or if we're working with Vincent, it might be how to use impasto or broken line drawing, you know, how he uses those choppy brush strokes.
Yes.
And a tool, especially on the first night, the tool is the paper cutter. We have a really remarkable paper cutter in the Willits High School Visual Arts Studio, which is the studio that I use for teaching these classes, and which is the studio that I have built up with the support of eScript over the last 25 years. And so it's a real state-of-the-art environment with all the resources that I need. So I am humbly grateful to Mendocino College for making it possible for me to continue to teach at the college level in the same studio that I developed over time.
Yes.
And so knowing how to use that and cut basic formats, you know, to go from 18 by 24 to 18 by 12, that's cutting it in half and cut it in half again, mm-hmm. or quarter it. You've
lots
got
of geometry.
Basic 9 by 12. Yeah, and
lots
you're even learning a little geometry as you go. And then we do a current events, and sometimes I have a reference note, like say if I'm doing Vincent van Gogh, I may want to do a reference note on post-impressionism, so I can just place it in its cultural context. And then, current events, something that's, then current events, so something that's happening, like imagine that out of the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, that Van Gogh has been stolen or damaged, so I might refer to that. And then we have the guest artist, and that would be Vincent himself. So a lot of people have sketchy things. You know, he cut off his ear, which isn't really quite what happened. He had a fight with Van Gogh, and he did cut, like, a little bit off the tip of his earlobe. And, you know, he was having a lot of emotional difficulties, and he had been hospitalized. And he was ill, and he had not been successful. He sold one $50 painting in his lifetime, you know, and just recently they're selling for $85 million.
Yes.
And you know, it's a very tragic story of a man who struggled. And most of his work was done in 10 years, the last 10 years of his life. All of those paintings that are so stunning and that look like slides, they're so brilliant, were done in a very short period of time. And, you know, he was an intellect. He spoke 5 languages and was a very literate communicator with the written word. And a really remarkable individual, but
yes, I always felt like he was sort of ahead of his time with the culture that, you know, he was living in, that he realized it was all alive and he couldn't quite communicate it.
Yeah, he's
but
very alone.
But maybe that's just my fantasy, but
I
felt like he kept,
you
know, trying. He kept trying to point out that it's all alive. It's all.
Yeah, but, and how important color was to him.
Yes.
And so then the next section, then usually I show a keynote presentation on Vincent's work, you know, how a drawing becomes a painting. And he left a wonderful series of drawings. And then we get to actually see his work and talk about it. And the keynote is very cinematic. It's an Apple product and very engaging. The students love those. And then I may do a presentation on the art elements. And each week I would do one, and there are 7. And then for the next 7 weeks after that, I would do the art principles, like, you know, pattern, contrast, emphasis. And then the art elements are basically your tools, and the principles are basically how you place in your composition the things that you made with the tools.
Yes.
So they're a little more complicated. Do that, a little keynote on that so they can see it visually, and then the making art part of it. Then I give them 4 choices that they can work on, or 5 or 6, depending on the class. And then they do that, and then we have a critique and a closing thought, and I tell them what their internet homework is for the next week, because I think it's real important that they become skilled and proficient with finding information about what they're interested in or what they need for other classes that they may be taking by using the internet and becoming
savvy
with what's genuine and what isn't.
Yes, yes, very good. Well, we're going to pause here for a minute so that I can tell our listeners that this is Education Now. I'm Athena Melville. My guest tonight is Kathleen Kirkpatrick, fabulous mentor and teacher of art for many, many years. And I'm just so delighted to have her with me here today by phone. We're pre-recording this because she can't be with us the evening of the show. She's teaching a drawing class.
That's so right. I've had between 3,500 and 4,000 students in my career here in Willits.
Yes.
Which, when you think about that, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And does that include the students you've had at Mendocino College?
No.
No, so, I mean, there's a lot more. Well, you know, my first encounter with Kathleen was when my fraternal twin sons, John and Nico, left our Montessori school, our K-12 Montessori school. At that time, you know, they were the oldest, and they were going into 10th grade, and they went to the high school in Willits. But they were not about to give up music, art, soccer, and they wanted the whole palette. You know, they wanted to continue to have the full palette, as, you know, well as the math, the English, the science. and the history.
And they become, one of them is a scientist now, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're both really scientists, but they still are into the arts and soccer and, you know, photography. And so there you were. There was Kathleen at the high school, and so many other wonderful people in the English department, the College Prep English, the stewards, some music and English, and Mr. Garcia, and the musicals, and the soccer, and I mean, it was a good experience for them. There, I do have things that didn't go, you know, we do have criticisms, but
sure.
Certainly not with what they were given in the arts or, you know, in music and with a love, you know, along with all of your experience in drama and the arts came that love from both you and your husband, Bob. Kirkpatrick, who was superintendent there for a while. Just such love. And I can't thank you enough for that, Kathleen.
Thank you. You know, I never had kids of my own, so I basically had 150 a day.
Yes, you did.
And that gave room for lots of love.
You're still remembered and loved, too. I want you to know that.
Well, I'm on Facebook, you know, and I probably have more friends than anybody because, well, I've got, you know, almost 300 friends now, and it's because I was the one and they were the many, and now it's my chance to see how they've turned out.
Yes.
And they love coming back and saying, you know, it was really great being there, and it really helped me to become who I am today. So
yes.
That's very gratifying. That's what it's all about. That's
so
the reward.
You're one of our county treasures.
Yeah, I'm still a living treasure.
Well, so now let's go to the eScript program let's talk about that for a while, where you used it to earn over $200,000 for the high school visual arts department. How does it work?
In 2000, well, basically the heart of it is that Safeway decided that they wanted to create and provide a program that would support the communities that support them. And they wanted to do it through the educational arena. And they wanted to do it basically K through 12. So they joined in with a company called eScript, no T on the end. And in that partnership, what happens is that a family goes shopping at Safeway, and they purchase the food that they need for their week. And then 1 to 2% of that purchase is donated to a designated educational institution or program. Like it could be Willits Unified School District, it could be Willits High School, or it could be the Visual and Performing Arts Department, or it could be just the Visual Arts Department. And families can decide to designate more than one school if they have two or three children in a school system. So then they would divide up their contribution. It doesn't cost the family anything.
Right.
All they have to do is sign up. Now, as a teacher, you are so absolutely busy. You know, I always saw teaching at the high school as stepping on a conveyor belt at the end of August and just shooting through the year and then
yes.
and hopping off in June.
Yes.
Hopping off. And so really a teacher to make eScript work for you, you need a partner who will ramrod the business end of it. When you sign people up at the beginning of each school year, there's a little form they fill out, and they link their phone number to their red card number. And Safeway has a red card program that gives everybody a discount at the store if you
yes.
have that red card.
Yes.
And that's one way that Safeway figures out what kind of products people want. So they're using that as a demographic tool.
Yes, I know this. I'm just wanting you to tell everybody, because even as our private school, we could use the eScript program.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter if it's private, charter, public, all educational institutions have access to this. And, you know, but what it really takes to be successful, and I have been extremely successful.
Yes, you have.
Is because I had that support of a person who stood up and said, I will take care of this for you. I will make these forms. I will register, you know, help register people. I will, you know, manage the communication with the eScript if something becomes confusing. So Bob, my husband,
right.
took over that for me. And he was a fantastic help. And he guided me, too, because originally, before the year 2000, you actually purchased script. You'd sit outside Safeway and sell these little pieces of paper that people could then use as money in the store and even get change for it. So then when it went electronic, which is the E of the e-script,
right.
You didn't have to sell that anymore. It just was all done, handled electronically. And it's been much easier, and it was much better. I was nervous at the transition. We were moderately successful before the transition. But Bob had the foresight and the vision, as been his gift in life, to say, no, you know, I think this, I can see where this is going to go. It's going to be better. And he was right. And people liked it because it was easy for them as a family. They liked it because it didn't cost them anything as a family, you know, struggling to get by with raising kids.
Right.
And they also saw the benefit. This is going to benefit my child in the art studio and in their visual arts class.
Right.
And it did. You know, I completely remodeled. I did it in phases. I did the floor, the walls, the ceiling, the blinds, the cupboards, the cabinets, the furniture, and all the chairs, the books, the videos, the DVDs, a digital design center with four computers and all the accoutrements that go with that, digital cameras and video cameras so that the students could use it. A student comes up to me and says, Kathleen, I need a picture of a bubble. I said, I've got bubble soap in my desk. Here it is. You know, I'd like to blow it if I'm feeling down. And so I said, take this outside. Here, take the digital camera. Ed, you carry that out for her and take the picture. Bring it back in. I'll print it out for you. And then you have a perfect picture. They could draw the beautiful iridescent bubble right there in their artwork with the fairy blowing it along just like they wanted.
Yes.
Because we had those resources right there at the ready, and a library of over 1,000 books and all the best papers and the best paints and better brushes and everything that they needed to really make it happen. You know, in a science classroom, Rob, my stepson, teaches science at Willett Science.
Yes.
He is a very chaotic teacher, because his subject is very well organized.
Mm-hmm.
But in the art studio, with a very chaotic, free, open kind of mission
subject,
you need everything to be very well organized. You know, you're going to just stop a kid in his tracks if he can't find the scissors or if there's no, you know, watercolor.
Yes, I understand. And that e-script is tied into your phone number, isn't it?
It is.
And so if you forget your card, you just need to remember your phone number. But
it has to be signed up originally with the phone number and the card number, because otherwise the card number is what actually makes it work.
Yes.
But if the card number and the phone number are linked, and they are in the form that we hand out at the beginning of every school year, because there's a studio fee to take the class, but you don't have to pay that if you sign up for e-script. But also, we don't force it because, you know, not everybody shops at Safeway, one thing. So if you shop at Safeway, great. Then you can do that. And the studio fee is just for materials that the kids take home.
Yes.
You know, they're not having to pay to run the school. The school is paying for that.
Right, I understand.
But it was an incredible thing in the last 7 years of my career to have this incredible opportunity to realize my vision, which was advanced at that age, at that particular time, because of my level of experience had advanced to the point where I had the vision. Then suddenly I had the money.
Yes. Oh, isn't it wonderful when things like that go together?
Oh, it was fantastic. I so enjoyed those last 7 years.
I had
years.
Always wished that, you know, there could be an e-script attached to the, you know, the health food store. Or the other stores. You know, it would be nice if it was attached to all of the stores, you know, if they could participate.
Yeah.
And there were those people who didn't want to participate because, you know, it was a corporation. But you know what? That Safeway employs a lot of people who live in our community.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just Safeway that is part of e-script. There's also L.L. Bean. There are restaurants, you know, that if you go there, they contribute.
Yes.
It's quite extensive.
Yes,
but in Willits, in this remote rural area where we live, we don't have L.L. Bean, and we don't have a lot of the big restaurants. So Safeway's the big heavy hitter here in Willits.
Right, that's the big heavy
hitter. I'm just hoping that the economic recession does not make Safeway panic
and
drop that program. And I don't believe that will happen. I think they feel that it's such a success that it's not necessary. And we certainly acknowledge Safeway for the wonderful thing that they've done every chance we get.
Yes, I would say so.
Well, we're going to, this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, and K201 HR 88.1 FM in Fort Bragg. This is Education Now. I'm Athena Melville. You're listening to a recording with Kathleen Kirkpatrick on art and the eScript program, and we'll get back right now.
Well, I think it would be wonderful at this point, now that everyone's heard your voice and what you're doing, to give them a little feedback on what your childhood was like.
Okay. I was born in Kingsburg, which is near Fresno, and my family gradually moved south as they were seeking, you know, success economically. And we lived in McFarland, which was a charming little rural community, and then Delano, and finally settling in Bakersfield. And I went to South High School in Bakersfield. We're the Mighty Rebels. And then I became a Regent Scholar at the University of California at Santa Barbara, which was wonderful. And that was a great scholarship because it was based on merit. But if you didn't have a lot of money, they pretty well covered your college expenses. And then if you still had merit, but your family had enough money to put you through school, then you just received an honorarium. So that was great, and that really got me started at UCSB. And I went there thinking I was going to major in political science and German. I'd been very successful in high school with Spanish. I took 4 years of Spanish, and I really liked languages, so I thought I'd try German. And I took an art history class that very first semester, and that just really blossomed in my mind and spirit, and I just knew that's what I was going to major in. And luckily at UCSB, if you are studying to be an art historian, you are required to take at least one studio class. And I've been drawing ever since I was very, very young. In fact, I got a lot of good feedback because one night when my dad fell asleep on the couch, I just sat there and drew a profile of him, and it did look exactly like him. And so my family was like, wow, Kathleen, you can really draw. So everybody's telling me that I can draw, so of course I believe it then, and continue to just do it. And it is true with drawing that some people have a natural gift in that they automatically see the picture plane, which is a flattened version of three-dimensional objects. So you can flatten them just inside your head and draw the outline instead of being confused by the three-dimensionality of it and struggle and not successfully be able to master that, because you just don't see the 3D. You flatten it out, which is the way I'm going to teach drawing, by having them draw originally on a sheet of plexiglass in the first few sessions. And that way, you know, they're drawing exactly what they see through the plexiglass, but it's flattening it out. So I want to... a drawing contest and got to take a drawing class maybe when I was 12 or 10. And then I continued taking those. I took only one class in high school, one semester, and that was really fun. But I had a real heavy academic load, and I couldn't quite squeeze it in. But I did get that one semester, which was great. And so that continued on. And then after I graduated, I decided I wanted to teach in high school because, you know, those were kind of hippie days, and I remember going into a store and someone looking at me and watching me like they thought I was going to steal something, you know, be a little kleptomaniac. Yeah. And I thought, you know, I don't really like that feeling. So I think I'll go join up a little bit more closer to society and get my teaching credential and work with high school students and still keep my art thing going. So I did that. I went back to school and got my credential and got my first job at my first interview at Terra Linda High School.
And where did you get your credential?
I got my credential at UCSB also.
At UCSB, not UC Santa Cruz?
No.
Okay.
That's where my grandson is.
At UC Santa Cruz?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Studying marine biology.
I think I was surprised. I think I saw the... UC Santa Cruz in the Willits News article, but I'm probably confusing it. We were in Santa Barbara, too, probably not at the same time.
When were you guys?
Well, John and Nico were born there.
Oh, my gosh!
We were in graduate school there.
I see. Yeah, that would have been after.
Yes, yes, would have been after.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so it was, you know, in your blood. But I did read in reading and doing my research on you, Kathleen, that you have a particular view of the child about age 12. You want to expand on that?
Sure. It's not really my view. It's pretty well established child development.
Uh-huh.
About the brain bilateralizing at about that age, and when that happens, you know, children draw freely and are completely happy drawing, and gradually their pieces become more and more expressive and somewhat more realistic, and you could almost chart how a drawing, say, of a house will look from at different ages.
Right, when they get into perspective.
Yeah.
It goes from the flat into the perspective.
And other things, like showing more detail, like smoke
yes.
coming out of the chimney,
yes.
and all of those things.
Yes.
But at that age, what happens is you become more critical. Your L mode, or left mode, which is more linear and wants to name things, isn't comfortable with unnamed things. It's anxious and nervous and bored when that happens. Kind of takes over, and it wants your work to look like a Michelangelo or a photograph. If it isn't, it puts you down. It says, "Oh, that looks stupid." You can hear that voice
yes.
inside your head. And a lot of kids just quit drawing unless they have a penchant, you know, a gift, and they can automatically have that flattening, and they are able to draw what they see accurately.
Right.
So children tend to go away from visual arts expression during that time period because they lose confidence. And you'll hear a lot of kids say, "I can't draw. I can't draw a straight line."
Mm-hmm.
No, who needs to draw a straight line? You've got a ruler. Let the ruler do it.
I've had different experience, you know, than you have. And I do not, I don't know if it's because of the environment, you know, just because there were unusual kids. No, I don't know why, but I have not had this experience with kids about 12. Although I will say that kids who have come to the environment that we were providing, who had bad experience being told that they couldn't or never really being allowed to draw because they were too busy, are being censored in what they could draw. I know children who came to school with me because they could not draw a marijuana leaf. It was, you know, bizarre. But so I haven't had that experience. Now, maybe I don't know why.
Hmm.
I do not know why.
What was your experience? That they were just able to continue at the same level all the way throughout?
Or well, they would do all kinds of different ways of expressing and that they gave each other permission. The kids did. The students themselves gave each other permission. And some of them wanted to just work with a pencil, and some of them it was just color. And,
how old were they?
Some of them it was collage, and so maybe those kids who were about 12, who were more into what you're describing, were like the collage because they could control.
Right, and they weren't having to try to make a likeness.
Right. But there were a great many of them who you just, quite frankly, I'm sure it had to do with the kind of kids that we were attracting, right. But
and see, if a kid has the opportunity as a creative soul and they're only doing collage, it's probably because they're afraid to try and do a likeness.
Yes.
And, you know, what's the big deal of doing a likeness? There is no big deal about it. It's just a nice skill to be able to have.
Yeah.
And in the 19th century, everybody drew.
Yes.
There were hundreds upon thousands of little drawing manuals that have since disappeared because they were made of such fragile materials.
Yes.
But it was part of your education.
Yes, it was.
In the United States, and it still is in many European countries,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you could draw things to show how to build things.
Yes.
And you could draw things to tell a story or to show somebody because they didn't have cameras, you know, maybe out in the country. Of course, 1839 is when the camera came about, but that was in big urban areas. And, you know, so it was a wonderful tool.
Yes.
And people recognize it as a tool, not just as some sort of misto cracko mumbo jumbo.
I think there isn't a language. It's a very, very old language that they still haven't deciphered, which is a picture language. So that, you know, it would be, you would have to, someone would have to, and there's still, I mean, there are people who think that they can read it, but that seems pretty logical to me that a picture language would be older than, you know, the symbols, you know, that then we string together. And so I can understand that. And I know that for a long time, the old Byzantine art by some of the more Victorian art critics saw that as flat and primitive. They couldn't see the perspective.
It's primitive instead of just, it's a cultural way of seeing.
Yes.
And, you know, I've seen a poster with the phrase on it, art, our first language.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that's always resonated for me, too.
Yes, and I think it's just so true that indeed that's how it is. But I will tell you that in terms of competition, my two, John and Nico really thought that John was a superior artist. And so he didn't do it as much as he might have. And then when he got to you, that all changed.
Oh, good.
And so, and I remember he was working on this eagle out of clay and every feather, you know, and really, and he always loved the camera, but he really developed that skill with your encouragement and tutelage. But also, I think most of all, he would say you were a great friend. And
yeah.
So,
you know, in an
the
art,
art
studio,
of friendship. What?
In an art studio, it's a different relationship. The first thing you have to do is establish a safety zone.
Yes.
You know, a very warm, inviting, encouraging atmosphere. It's almost like a nutrient soup or something like that where, you know, people can, number one, relax. And one of the things that is a detriment to creativity is surveillance.
Yes.
You know, and censorship. And those are things that you have to do mm-hmm. to a degree as a teacher. But if you're sensitive to it, you can manage it beautifully so that, you know, when you go by and look at something, you know, you don't want to have a frown on your face. You have to be disciplined. You know, you have to control. I tend to just scowl about naturally. And I'm not even, just because I'm thinking about stuff. But in the classroom, never that. Always mm-hmm. the open face and, you know, a smile and going, nodding like, I see what you're up to, or
right.
I've got an idea here, let me give you a suggestion you can take or not take. You're
yes.
the artist, you have to make the final decision.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to have options. You know, and just give that kind of, you have to create, the very first thing is create that environment.
I would say you're just a natural.
I guess so.
I was also wondering if you had heard of Rhoda Kellogg and her book, The Psychology of Children's Art.
No, I have not.
I would love to share that with you at some point, because she talks about these patterns with children, at certain stages, how they all draw this sort of circle quartered by a cross, you know, and it might be, you know, and it's in different colors, and it might be square, and give it different names. But at a certain age, they all draw this, and then she goes on to, you know, so that the psychology, in other words, if the child has all their needs met, you know, then they're moving through, you know, their process.
Uh-huh.
It's a fascinating book.
Yeah, I am dismally lacking in a lot of knowledge about all the different levels of child development. I mean, I've looked at the stages, but I've never really studied it in depth.
Well,
so
you're just a natural.
That
That's what I'm saying. It's not well, it's not missing, let me tell you. you meet your students, look at what you've accomplished, and you know that there's nothing missing.
In terms of something that I've conceptualized, I haven't really conceptualized that
yes.
as much as, because I've worked this whole time with grades 9 through 12.
Yes.
I had to tell you a funny story. One time I was invited over to a fourth grade classroom to help them develop some ideas for the stationery for this new school, Mill Creek School. And so I'd only worked with grades 9 through 12, and I came over to the classroom, and I was working with the kids a little bit and talking with them and standing up at the front of the room, and I asked them a question, and every single kid in the room leaned forward, you know, at a 45-degree angle, their arms wiggling in the air, you know, and I was astounded. I didn't know what to say. I took a step back because, you know, when you're working with high school kids, they do not respond like that.
Yes.
You know, you almost have to kind of crank it out of them and be very gentle to bring it out. But these kids were like, every single, not a single person would, and they were just, I want to answer the question. And I was like, appalled.
Pick me.
It was really funny.
Oh, that sounds wonderfully fun. Well, hi, I want to ask you, we need to go, we have about five more minutes that we can go on, and has it flown for you? It seems to have flown for me.
Yes.
This time. But I want to be sure that you give contact information if you'd like.
I would.
So contact information for Kathleen Kirkpatrick
is my phone number, if you have a question or concern, is 459-5953 here in Willits. I'm in the phone book, too.
Yeah, 459-5953.
That's it. And then my email address is, I think the easiest one to remember, is kathleenkk@me.com.
Repeat it.
Okay. Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N, K-K, at me.com.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
I'm an Apple person.
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted to talk about computers.
Yes, I do want to talk about computers. You have, as we've been talking, you've brought it up, but can we go over it again? Do you have, you use the computers for assessment and for preparation and organizing, but they're also Macintoshes for art.
Yes. And
tell us about your that center.
Yeah, the first thing I want to say is that I don't know how I made it as an educator for as long as I did without the computer record and the ability to create beautiful documents that are easy to access and decode. And second, yeah, we have a tech tower with four Macintoshes and the appropriate peripherals that are needed to make things go, you know, like flash drives and stuff like that, ways of transferring information from one computer to another, and also internet and the email and all that, sending images. You know, students can send us images that we can print out, and they can have those in their portfolio to work with. And then we have, you know, programs like Painter and Photoshop and Bryce 6 and Poser, which gives you physical figures that you can manipulate and then use in digital artworks. So most artworks can be created traditionally with brush and pencil, etc., or digitally. It's an equally engaging medium. I become as lost and suffused with pleasure, lost in track of keeping track of time,
yes,
as when I'm working on something digitally, as I do when I'm working traditionally.
Right, it's a passion.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's really fun. You
yes.
know, it's just delightful. And the students love that too. And of course, many of them are technologically skilled, and many of them are not. I mean, it's amazing. People are always saying, oh, learn from the kids. Well, I haven't really experienced that myself, except in some areas where they're kind of going behind the box. But in terms of using applications to create things, they are not that skilled, and they need support and help to learn how to make the program work for them. And so it's a great another art tool. You know, it's just terrific, like Sumio and all the different art tools that are available to people. That's another one. And we're very fortunate to have it. In fact, today, Carolyn and I, she's now teaching at the high school, and I was her mentor, and still I'm giving her support in the background. We've decided to order four brand-new Macintosh iMacs for the design center. And so they'll all be the same level. We've got about four different machines at all different levels and struggling memory and slowness. And so we're just going to bite the bullet. And we have, because of eScript, we can afford to do that.
Isn't that awesome? That is so awesome.
It is really
now,
awesome.
Now, the article about you in the Willits News on the 7th of this month by Maureen Moore, and she was a student of yours.
Yes,
you
she's
say.
A former student at both at the high school and college level. Some of my students, Athena, come to take the class at the college level so they can have a nostalgic experience. It's really quite cute. Oh, I get to be with Kathleen again.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of person you are.
Just and they
pleasure.
Are.
Yeah. Well, Let's see, any final thoughts? I mean, I think we really covered discovering and developing creative imagination. But do you feel that there's something that you didn't say?
Well, I have a beautiful quote here by Friedrich Frank, who wrote The Zen of Seeing, and I'd love to share that with you.
Yes.
Here it is. I have learned that what I have not drawn, I have never really seen, and that when I start drawing an ordinary thing, I realize how extraordinary it is. Sheer miracle.
So beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, there is the beauty in the tiniest, most simple thing.
Yes.
And another interesting thing is that, you know, when I look at students' work, you know, to give them feedback, sometimes just the most minute change makes a dramatic effect. And it's really good to share your work with others and get their feedback and, you know, figure out for yourself whether you need to take it or not. But the tiniest change can sometimes make a huge difference.
Yes, yes, I understand. Well, do you have any final words about eScript that you want to share?
Thank you, Safeway. I love you. And
yes,
I'm so grateful.
Yes, I'm so grateful. And thank you to Bob Kirkpatrick for sharing you with us.
My partner.
Yes.
Yes. He's wonderful.
Oh, he is so wonderful. He's such a golden dragon.
Yes.
Thank him so much for sharing you with us, and thank the dogs.
I will.
And
have a
wonderful class on the 20th. I'll miss not being with you live, but I've enjoyed this so very, very much.
It's really been fun. You'll have to come and take my drawing class sometime, Athena. I think you'd like it.
Okay, thank you, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
Well, that was Kathleen Kirkpatrick, and I enjoyed it so much, and I hope you did too. And once again, Kathleen's contact information, her phone, 459-5953. Email Kathleen, KK, KathleenKK at ME.com. And of course, my name, Athena Melville. My personal contact information is hermes@pacific.net, hermes@pacific.net. I always welcome your comments and feedback here on Education Now. Next month, September 17th, my guest on Education Now will be Joanne Deet, PhD and psychologist, talking. Oh, it's going to be wonderful. I think you'll enjoy it very much. And you know that all programs aired on Education Now are archived at our website, www.pacificsites.com/Hermes. And you can listen there and download. Education Now programs are all featured on the American Montessori Society e-newsletter and on the website, and on their website events calendar at www.amshq.org. That's www.amshq.org. I also wanted to tell you that you should always to check out the AllianceForChildhood.org, where people are trying so hard to intervene for the good of our children, because we're hurting our children. Please, if you haven't read Jonathan Cozzal's book, The Shame of the Nation, I really suggest that you do so. I wanted to tell you about a wonderful art opening that I went to today at the Boonville General Store, and it'll be on display August 20th through September, and it's by Hannah Newcomer. This is Hannah's first art show. She's 9 years old and has lived in Yorkville her whole life. She is inspired by her animals, nature, and Frida Kahlo. Through her homeschool studies, she has learned about Frida Kahlo and Pablo Picasso. She has been introduced to acrylics, watercolor, needle felting, and Fimo. Her favorite medium is acrylic. This year, she would like to learn about Diego Rivera and Henri Matisse. She would also like to do more watercolor, and she hopes you enjoy her work. So go by and see
9-year-old Hannah's beautiful work if you get an opportunity at the Boonville General Store. I also wanted to play some music and dedicate it to Kathleen.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand.
And of course, this is Vincent, and I just really want to thank Verge so much for helping me find it and record it, and I wish we had time to listen to it all, but we don't. I want to tell you that tomorrow from 9 to 10, be sure to catch the Access program with Norm Duvall, and from 1 to 2, Corporations and Democracy. They're going to be interviewing Chris Hedges, who wrote Empire of Illusion, so you won't want to miss that. And tonight, right after Education Now, The Treehouse with W. Dan, who all gives us all so much pleasure. And then Dead Air with Muerto Muerto after The Treehouse tonight. And then here on KZYXNC after Muerto Muerto and Dead Air on The Verge. So thanks to everyone here at KZYXNC for their support, and thank you to Rich and all of the staff. And if you aren't a member, please think of becoming one now. This is a wonderful station, and together we'll make it work. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and streaming on the web at kzyx.org. We are Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and hope to see you and talk to you next month. Stay tuned for Earth and Sky.
How you tried to set them free, they would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will.